Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. The Inside Analog Photo radio program is all about the traditional photographic process. We talk about all aspects of analog photography, including the hybrid workflow. You can find out more information over at www.insideanalogphoto.com. And of course, Inside Analog Photo is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. These guys have the coolest instant photography materials known to mankind. They have, of course, the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4x5, color and black and white. They have the Instax systems in the wide format, the Instax 210 camera and film, and of course the Instax Mini in the Instax Mini 7 and the Instax Mini 25, both in color film. Beautiful stuff. There's nothing cooler than instant photography. You get a print, because if you don't have a print, you don't have a real photograph. This is great fun stuff. This is great for art. This is great for business. This is cool stuff. You definitely want to check them out over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends over at Photo Publicist, providing worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development for the photographer, turning photographers into celebrities. You can find out more information over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the highest quality work known to mankind anywhere on this planet. Unbelievable developing, scanning, and of course, output on high quality Fuji Crystal Archive. Unbelievable cool stuff these guys are up to. And remember, you don't have a photograph unless you have a print in your hand, and you need to print your pictures. This is important. You need to supply proofs to your customers and even print your own work, because it's not about looking at it on a monitor. It's about holding a print in your hand. Definitely check these guys out at Richard Photo Lab, of course, at richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5. DR5 Chrome Black and White Developing, that turns your black and white neg into, that's right, black and white chrome. Unbelievable stuff. www.dr5.com. Our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. For the camera strap that will not slip off your shoulder, guaranteed bar none, the coolest strap around. Our friends at Iger Studios for the finest quality drum scans known to mankind, igerstudios.com. Our official media partner, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, for all things traditional photographic process on the web, www.apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.eastmanhouse.com. Today on Inside Analog Photo, we're going to be here with Joseph Prizio. Joseph is a photographer out of Boston, and of course, what does he like to shoot on? Film. That's it. Medium format, 35, the fabulous Hasselblad X-Pan. Great, great work using the X-Pan in a wedding and portrait situation. Wide format, panoramic, film-based portraiture. A lot of cool stuff going on with Joseph, and an advocate for film. You know, and an all-around cool guy. He's got beautiful work. Check out his website, www.josephprizio, that's J-O-S-E-P-H-P-R-E-Z-I-O-S-O, josephprizio.com. Joseph, how you doing today?
I'm doing awesome. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you on the program today to chat about yourself, your wedding photography, your wedding cinematography, and some great things you're up to.
Thanks. Glad to be here. I'd love to talk to you.
So, Joseph, tell me about yourself and what you're doing today, and then we'll dig deeper.
Right now, this is kind of the mid-end of my wedding season here in Boston. Keep going until pretty much the end of November. So I'm shooting 2 to 3 weddings a week right now. And during the week, it's just me editing and going back and forth and dealing with new brides. I'm also dealing with the release of my new book right now as well.
You do have a brand new book.
I do, but we can talk about it later if you want.
I do. So tell me about the wedding and portrait business there in Boston where you're at. What areas do you cover typically? What time of work are you doing?
Boston is a very saturated market. East Coast wise, we get some of the best and most talented photographers, because you have so many newspaper photographers in this area. So we have all those people from the Boston Globe, Boston Herald, and all these colleges in the town that people study photography at. So it's a mecca, just like New York or LA or any of these major cities. So competition-wise, highly competitive wedding market, and the brides, they want really good quality, and they expect really good results. And there's just a trend of everybody went digital, and I went digital as well over the past 10 years, and I used to be a newspaper photographer, so I learned on film, and I shot all my early weddings all on film, and lately I've been just trying to always do different. When everybody was shooting film, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to go out and buy a Canon DCS 520 or whatever, and I'm going to shoot digital. And now everybody's digital. I'm trying to reintroduce film into my market, and Bride's been eating it up, at least so far.
So let's chat about your involvement in photography. When did you actually start taking pictures? When did you have a keen interest in wanting to be a photographer?
That's going to go back into like the 90s on family vacations. I was always the one as a little kid with the camera. I mean, I'm sure it's most people that are in the industry today. But as a serious person, it's really funny. I got into it through model railroading. I was an avid model kit builder. I would build these little dioramas of like Boston and Main Railroad or the Union Pacific. And I would want to photograph it to make it look like it was a real thing. So you couldn't do that with a point and shoot. You had to have an all manual camera. And I picked up, I think it was a Canon F80 or something. It was an old Canon rangefinder that my grandfather gave me. I shot that with that. From there, I moved up to a Canon Rebel, and it was family functions and just fun. And it ended up me just shooting tons and tons of slides. I joined a society called the Lynn Photographic Society, which was this group of people who'd meet once a week, and they rented out a church, and they put up these two huge projectors and a huge screen. They would do slideshows. So I was maybe 16, 17. I'd be going there on a weekly basis, and they would have these photographers coming in from around the country. I was probably the youngest person in there at the time. I think the average age in that place was 55 and up. And there I was, a 16-year-old. I'd be watching a lot of German guys who come in and show all these awesome Yellowstone photos. And everything was on slide, all chrome. And it was just magnificent views, all these incredible landscapes and stories they were telling. Very National Geographic. And I just fell in love with it. I started shooting slide films, particularly by the case by Costco. They had the Ektal 100 cases you could buy. I think it was like 20 packs. From there, I just kept on evolving, keep on shooting more carousels, doing slideshows to people. I bought up, I think it was an Agfa projector. I'm not exactly sure who made it. And I had this old blue pull-up screen that would do slideshows for everything. And even on my family vacations, I always went on the tours. I went to Europe for 2 weeks, and I shot Italy like crazy. And sometime after that, I was at a family function, and I was shooting some pictures. I think I had a Rebel G at the time. And come to find out, this was a family reunion, and I come from a big Italian family. So there's like 400 of us just in my immediate side here in Boston. So this is one side of my family, the Sicilian side. And come to find out, one of my cousins is an advertising editor at a newly formed newspaper company. And she's like, oh, why don't you just come and shoot for us? So they gave me like a parade and I think go shoot some kids doing sports. And I shot that. And they were just really amazed at my work. And I became a full staff photographer for them, I think by 2000. And I remember being there like at 9/11 and people were going down and I wanted to go down, but I was too young. From there, I just spawned and I got really into photojournalism. I went to college. I got a degree in journalism. And I was trying to do everything I could. I mean, I have a book here in front of me that I was reading. I just pulled out a lot of cool stuff today, story-wise. One of the really influential book for me was The Associated Press Guide to Photojournalism by Brian Horton. And I have a note in here that I kept, and it says, I was trying to get in to work with AP at the time because I was already working for the other newspapers. Dan Hansen was the photo editor at the time, and I had a note, and it says, call me the Friday after September 11th. So that was like the first week of September before all that stuff happened, and I just kept it that way. But that book was really influential to the way I shot. I wanted to be that photojournalist. I wanted to be that guy out in Afghanistan or Haiti and shooting those events. I wanted to get those photos that would make people cry and have emotion. But then I got laid off, and like all things happen, you evolve and things move. So I got into movie making, and I made a movie a few years ago. We raised about $30,000 for it, and it was a small independent film, brought it up to Hollywood. But we had nobody big in it. We couldn't sell it. But I learned a lot. I mean, I spent almost a year of my life just working on a film, whether it was shooting, casting, editing, and directing. And the whole time, I was still doing little string assignments for newspapers that would hire me at the time here in Boston, and shooting weddings. At one particular wedding, it was one of those DJ companies that had a conglomerate of everything, and they said, well, we'll give you so many weddings this summer. Like, okay. And that was really how I got into weddings, was through that. They would give me 20 weddings to shoot, and I would go shoot them. And then I would just give them a disc or give them my roll of film. And that was the end of it. I didn't want to do that anymore. I said, no, I'm going to shoot for myself. And in 05, I opened up my own studio, meeting people at Starbucks, that is. And then in 07, I actually had a physical studio space here in Middleton, Mass., which is about 15 miles north of Boston. So that's kind of the story of where I came from in a really quick, fast nutshell.
So let's chat about this involvement in motion cinematography. When you guys shot your independent film, was this on video? Was it on film? What did you do?
We wanted to shoot it on film. We all wanted to shoot 16mm, but at the time, the budget just wouldn't support it for the transfers and stuff. We couldn't even afford HD at the time. The HD cameras, if I recall correctly, were like over $1,000 a day. So we ended up shooting on a Panasonic XDX 900, which still shot 16.9 and had a really good CCD. And it looked like 16mm, and that's what we shot it, because I sat down with a company called Boston Camera. And we said, we're either going to spend the extra money on Super 16, or we're going to shoot it on the SDX 900. They showed us test footage they had shot there, and it was just so close. And with Final Cut Pro coming out about that time as a really good editing tool, we end up going with that. Nutshell, we probably shouldn't have, because there was just a lot of digital inconsistencies that I didn't like. I didn't like having to do pull downs and the frame rates not being exact all the time and getting artifacting and sometimes in low light, and the reds just looked horrible. I mean, every time you saw a red light, you had those interlacing lines, even though we were shooting progressive. So that was a downside, but we got extra money from doing that to get better props and better actors. We ended up being 90 minutes long, and then we had to do a reshoot, and the main actress couldn't come back to the reshoot, so we cut the whole movie to 68 minutes or something. So it was kind of a bit of a mess, but it was a whole summer of shooting, and I was basically watching the whole movie from the little monitors and directing, and once in a while I would do some shooting from that. But I wanted to make sure this is what I want, and this is how I want it to look.
How did you find that your experience with shooting weddings and other event work prior than making the movie, and then the involvement you had in the movie, and now post of the movie, how did that affect, or did it affect, the way that you see things now, and did it change anything to do with your wedding and portrait photography?
Oh, definitely. Every time I do something new, every time I take on a new adventure, it affects the way I shoot a wedding. When I shot the movie, prior to that, I never really thought about 4:3 versus 2:35 or 2:4 cinemascope. I was always just squares and whatnot. And that opened my eyes to really widescreen and thinking of long shots and also about compression shooting. That's where I kind of first came to the realization of depth of field on a smaller sensor versus a full frame sensor with a 35mm negative. You know, with a bigger sensor, larger area of capture, you have a smaller depth of field, so you can shoot wide open and get that out of focus look. Whereas you're shooting like on a video camera with a small sensor, everything's pretty much in focus all the time. And I wasn't used to that. And then I kind of wanted to shoot film more at that point because I wanted to have that depth of field. Or I wanted to shoot digital on full frame bodies. And that's the only cameras I've used since when I shoot digital, is they have to be a full frame. So I use like the Canon 1DSs because I wanted to get full frame. But how that all came into my approach for wedding photography is when I shoot it, I want to be like a photojournalist. So that's my mentality, is step one. Cover everything, get those moments. I'm not shooting to shoot a million pictures. I don't want that. I'm shooting the shots. They're going to count. They're going to tell a story. The editors used to say, who, what, when, where, and why. Those are the shots. If it doesn't tell you that, the shot's pointless. So I've always shot like that. But when it comes time to do portraits, I will go into a cinematic directorial mode where I don't want to tell them to do this, lift your shoulder 45 degrees, turn your head. I don't want to do that. What I want to do is direct. And what I found has been really successful to me is giving them motivation and directing, like, okay, guys, this is what I'm thinking. Can you guys hold hands over here? I just want you to walk down the street. When you get to that light post right down over there in the corner, can you just tell her how you felt when you saw her coming down the aisle? Or tell her what you were feeling when you were proposing to her. And I'm not looking for the dramatic like that. And sometimes I'll say things like, oh, can you just tell her a naughty joke? It just depends what I'm looking for. And I really don't care how they react to it as long as they do react to it. I'd rather capture a real emotion from them rather than say, hey, can you guys laugh now, or can you guys look serious? But if I motivate them, if I say something that evokes an emotion, if I ask them to look really serious and think about how they felt when the father gave away, some people will react to that and they'll get a tear to their eye and they'll get that really serious look. But some people, they're going to start crack up laughing because they're just bubbly and giggly like that. Either way, I don't care. I just want to have something that's real and tangible versus something I made up. And that's kind of how I do the weddings now, is I direct the portrait times, except for the family photos. When it comes down to family photos, then I'm like Gestapo, and I'm lining people up, and I'm just like, okay, do this, click, 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 out, done. Everybody wants those, everybody hates them, but you need them. And then the whole reception is just as a photojournalist, and I'm thinking constantly as a movie in my head. That's how I'm shooting the wedding. I'm looking through the movie as if I'm seeing this shot by J.J. Abrams or Steven Spielberg or Ridley Scott, and those are my inspirations. Even when I'm framing and stuff, I'm thinking like Blade Runner or Empire of the Sun. And those are the things that really inspire my shooting and my idea concepts, is pretty much movies.
I want to just see how that sort of involved and how that changed the way that you look at subjects when you actually start trying to set up cinematic shots, and the way that you craft things with a movie is definitely much different than doing photojournalistic coverage.
Really 180. So if I'm shooting the bride and she's getting ready, I'm pure photojournalistic. I mean, I might say better light near that window and go do it over there. And I'm flying the wall, yes, but I'm also there, and I build a relationship with my clients prior to the wedding through engagement shoots and just hanging out and getting drinks with them. Because I want them to be cool with me. I don't want having them nervous. So once that bond is there, then I can shoot them, and I'm getting these real moments because they're aware the camera's there, but they're not breaking, I don't know if it's called breaking the third wall, the fourth wall, some expression. They're not breaking that because they don't even realize I'm taking the photos because they're just so comfortable with me at that point. And so when I'm shooting as a photojournalist, that's how I want to shoot. I want to shoot like I'm Steve McCurry dressed up like an Afghan in a camp somewhere where I'm making believe I'm one of them. So that's kind of how I shoot that. I want to get those photos and not have them faked. But when it comes to the cinematic stuff, making the movie made me realize how to work with people, large groups, actors, everybody, and create scenes of magic. When it comes down to framing them, I'm framing them in my camera like I would frame for a movie. Even when we were making the movie, I would take shots on my Canon camera and then show them, like, all right, this is what I want to shoot. I want a wide shot or I want a mid shot. When I'm shooting, I'm usually thinking cinematic moments in my mind. It could come from any movies, but I mean, a lot of stuff like Blade Runner and Empire of the Sun, which is not really wedding stuff, but I think of shots like that close up to people's faces with the way the lighting is. And that's how I pretty much want to light my shots or shoot.
So tell me about what type of client are you attracting with your business? Is it mostly people that want photojournalistic coverage? Is it because you do know how to sort of do the director deal and align people and get these great shots? What do you find that is the biggest draw that people are wanting to have Joseph shoot their gigs?
My work is very, I hate to say stylized, but it's very distinct. I like to have high contrast, deep blacks, and bright brights. My work, it looks different than a lot of other stuff around here. And I don't say traditional, but I mean, there's a lot of photojournalistic shooters, but my stuff is kind of different because I'm shooting for those high contrast moments. I'm shooting high key a lot. And clients that are hiring me, they like my look. They like the darkness. I'm not edgy like a crazy stuff edgy, but it's a little edgier than your typical Italian wedding photographer. Like if you look at my parents' albums and my cousin's albums, it's all cookie cutter shots. And that's something in Boston that is just kind of being breaking out of now. So I'm getting the more educated client. I'm getting those art school, the college educated client that knows photography, that goes to the Museum of Fine Art, and they know what they want. They want to read National Geographic, and they want images of their wedding that were taken like someone shot a story for that. And those are typically the clients I'm getting. I'm also getting the clients that love fashion. I'm getting the girls who want to get dressed up, like a bride today. We're talking about her engagement shoot, and she wants to do an Alice in Wonderland theme thing, which is awesome. That's something that I have friends that their clients aren't going to want to do. So my clients want to be photographed, they want to be edgy, they want to be really creative, and those are the clients that I'm attracting. But by doing that, I am also putting myself kind of in a corner, so I'm not gaining every bride who's getting married. I'm getting that 1 out of 10 bride that's like that. Like wedding I did last weekend with a bride, really into fashion for her engagement shoot. She wanted to do something that was relating to her and what she was into, so we talked on the phone a while, and she was really into French cinema in college. So we shot her engagement shoot to mimic the movie Breathless. I think it's 1960-something, a new wave cinema film from France about this girl from New York who's selling New York Herald Tribune in Paris, and she meets up with a gangster, and it's a tragic love story. So we recreated that in the North End here in Boston, which is kind of like the Italian-European part of the city, so it looks kind of like Paris. So she got the outfit like the girl wore in the movie, and he dressed up kind of like the gangster in the movie, and we recreated still frames from that movie. But that was what she wanted, and she was really into it. A lot of couples aren't going to do that. A lot of couples are like, oh, what do we do now? It's just some couples really click, and I'm getting those couples that click, and they have real emotion. And for her wedding, which is a little different, was instead of coming to the church in a limo, they had a tent wedding. So she pulled up to the tent in her rebuilt 1968 Chevelle that she did herself. So I'm attracting people like that, that are a little bit more different, and they want to be a little different for their wedding. They don't want a cookie-cutter wedding. And they see my stuff, and they want that.
So let's chat about your use of film and analog capture. You started off photography with using film. Tell me about how you've been incorporating analog now into more and more of what you're shooting.
I was shooting slide film, 1 or 2 rolls here and there for the past 4 years now, but not as consistent. Everything started consistent last October when I've been dying to get a panoramic camera. And I was in New York and I stopped by the Lomography booth and I picked up a Horizon panoramic camera from them. Never used one before, didn't really know what it was going to do, and just started shooting some Sia film in it. And I just walked around New York and shot a bunch of stuff. I got back with stuff, and I looked at it, I'm like, holy cow. I could not imagine the tones I was getting with it, the way the city looked. It just looked so surreal. versus some shots I took visually. They were clean. They didn't have emotion to them. Colors weren't the same, which is typical. I mean, digital is very clean. It's ultra realistic, but the film had more of that Blade Runner look to it, that little bit more of the gritty, the higher contrast. And I said, from here, I'm bringing this to every wedding. And I did. So all winter, I was like, oh, I can't wait till the summer comes. So I was shooting all high-speed black and white film. I was shooting TMZ 3200 or the Ilford version as well. It's all I could shoot because all the Boston weddings in the winter, the sun sets at 3 o'clock over here. Everything is inside in night weddings. So I was using that all winter. But once the spring came, I'm like, wow, this camera is amazing. I'm outside with it, and the vistas, the colors, the portrait film, oh my God, just amazing colors. I couldn't believe it. So from there, I went out and I got an X-Pen. And then now I'm shooting with the X-Pen. I'm like, oh my God. Because now the horizon where it had a swing lens, you could not focus. Camera's fully manual. So everything basically was Sunny 16 on it. I had to guess it, and you had to wind and crank the film shot by shot. You had to make sure that you turn the left lever on it to make sure that the spool is tight so that you don't get an overlapping frame. With the X-Pen, I didn't have to worry about that. But I still use the horizon as well. And then I introduced the Pentax 645. And I like using that one because it's like an SLR. But I do prefer to use the X-Pen. And I've been shooting about 10 to 20 rolls every wedding with my X-Pen and the Horizon. And just getting a different look, that panoramic look that to me is cinematic. And that's what my bride's been calling. They were like, oh, what's that movie camera thing you're using? Because they get the frames in my blog and it looks like a still frame for a movie because it's a widescreen look and not a 2-to-3 ratio. So this is like 2-to-4 ratio. And it's just a lot different. And I really don't see a lot of people shooting on that camera. So to me, it's like I'm standing out from the crowd now. People are seeing that, and they're wanting that, and they're mentioning that to me when they book me. Like, we want to make sure you shoot that. We want the black and white. And people always say, yeah, we want black and white. And for years, I'm like, oh, yeah, I used to do everything digital, and I'll make it black and white. But lately, when they sit down for the client meeting, I bring them in, and I'm like, you know what? I'm shooting real film. So when you get your black and white shots, they're going to be actually shot on a black and white camera, on real black and white film. It's not something I faked in digital or post-production. And they're amazed and like, oh, wow, you can do that? I'm like, yeah. And they get excited about it. And when they get excited about it, I'm happy because now I'm doing something that they haven't heard from anybody else. Everybody and their grandmother is pretty much shooting digital now. And there's not a huge problem with that, but when I think of photography, I think photography was film. That's what I learned on it. At the newspaper, I have these packs and packs of film. And it's going to the lab, getting it back. And that's why I got into photography, because I like looking at my images. I like looking at photographic prints. And just to backtrack a little, I had always given my clients prints. Everybody who booked, I always gave them a print set. Now it's optional just because some clients would rather put the money towards an album. But when I first started wedding photography, I wasn't really doing albums. I was just doing print sets. People would get 600 prints, 4x6s. And I always try to push the prints because I think it's supposed to be tangible, and I want to look at it. And I want them to be able to show the photo to their grandmother who can't look at a computer screen, or she's looking at a computer screen and she has no idea what it is. She doesn't know how to go on Facebook or my proofing site, but her granddaughter can go over her house with a box of prints and show them to her. That's a real moment that they have, and that's something that she can have 20 years from now and show somebody when the CD that she had the photos on is scratched or something. And the clients like that, so they're liking me talking about the film because no one else does it. Some of them are scared. They're like, well, what if you mess something up? Well, I'm shooting a lot more than one frame, I tell them, and my assistant's shooting as well, so everything is under control. So it's not for everybody. Some brides, they were raised in the digital era, and they read the magazines who say, oh, your photographer should be shooting digital. And they're like, they won't want me. And that's fine. I don't want them as a client. I want the bride that wants me because she knows I'm doing something different. It's not that I'm pushing the envelope because there's people who are doing a lot way more than me and a lot more edgier things than me. But I'm doing something that's a little against the grain of what people are doing in my market here. As far as I know, none of my friends are shooting it. I do have a few friends bringing a wide deluxe to a wedding, and maybe they'll shoot a roll. But I don't know a lot of people who are shooting 40% of their wedding on film right now.
Do you find that clients are searching you out because you are shooting film, doing analog capture?
I've had a few clients who have, because I do have a few vendor locations that kind of sell me. And when they tell their clients, well, we have Joseph, and he still shoots film, sometimes the clients will respond to that and they'll call me. I just booked a couple, Matt and Krista, for next May, and their wedding is going to be in Newport. And he's a director for cinema. He's working on a new movie with Jim Carrey at the moment. And they wanted me because they like that cinematic look. They make movies. That's their living. And they like film because they still shoot on film a lot of movies. I mean, most J.J. Abrams movies today are still shot. Like that new Star Trek movie, if you saw it, was all shot on, I think, Panavision. Because he wanted to capture it on full cinematic quality of a 35mm negative. So I'm getting people like that who appreciate that. And they're hiring me. I also have an associate who is opening up a bridal lounge, and she picked me to be one of the vendors that will be promoted through them. I did have to pay to be in there as well. But I was selected to be one of the few photographers in the location, and she told me I will be the only photographer offering film that she is selling to brides coming in there. So I do have people who are saying that, and that is getting me clients, yes.
So, Joseph, tell me about what kind of gear you're shooting with.
Oh, I should probably send you a photo of me at a wedding with five cameras on me. I kind of look like one of those Vietnam photographers in the trenches. That's what my assistant says. She's like, you look like you're going to war. I'm like, I am. Typically at a wedding, I have my Canon 1DS on one shoulder with a 35mm 1.4. Then I have a Canon 1D Mark III, which has a 1.3 sensor, and that has my 85-1.2 on it. That was my bulk load. And now, once I added film, I added on the X-Pan over my shoulder or over my neck. So now I have three cameras on me, and then if I'm shooting Super 8 at that wedding, then I have my belt, and I wear the Super 8 camera around my little memory card pouch. And then in my pockets, for my suit or my pants, I have rolls of film. And then I have a magic marker to mark on the film how I shot it so that it can get it processed correctly. And that's typically how I'm shooting physically, is with those bodies. I also bring a bag with other gear in it, like I bring an 80 to 200, which I'll use if there's good light and I want to keep my distance. But primarily, I'm using an 85-1.2 and a 35-1.4, and then the X-Pan, which has a 45-f4 lens on it. And I'll pretty much shoot the entire wedding with that. I do have my flashes and stuff, and I used to use a lot of flash, and I've just kind of got out of it, and I've been using less flash. As far as coverage goes, when it comes time to do dancing photos, and they turn the lights off, and they put the club lights on, then I have to use flash, regardless. But mostly, I'm shooting ambient light on high ISO. I want to shoot at 1.2, 1.4. I think most of my shots probably between 1.2 and f2.2, somewhere in that range, and I like shooting at 3200 and 1600. That's typically how I like to shoot 90% of the wedding. I also bring studio strobes with me in my truck at every wedding when it comes time to do family portraits. It's a traditional market in a sense that you have big families, and there's a lot of Greek, a lot of Italian weddings. I mean, I'm Italian, and I just know from what I expect at my own family functions and my family expects, so I try to bring that to other weddings. Is I think family portraits, whether it's the bride and her mother and father, I think those should look really nice. I don't like to make those look messy or quick. And sometimes when brides want to do them outside in the middle of the day, I'm like, no. She said, but it's so casual. I'm like, yeah, but it's not going to be pretty. I like to make those shots look really nice. So if we're at a hotel in Boston or if we're in a country club, I'd like to set up my studio strobes and basically bang out the family portraits under controlled lighting, whether I'm using umbrellas or bouncing it off the ceiling, and make those all match and very unique looking. So that's kind of the gear I'm bringing to the wedding. And then my Super 8 cameras, which I have a Canon 310 XL and 514 XL, both with modified widescreen gates.
So let's talk about the motion capture. Do you find that brides want to have a Super 8 style wedding shot where you don't have any recorded sound, there's no crystal sink, and you're shooting more of a nostalgic cinematic look?
Mm-hmm. I find they love it. Every bride that I've shown it to so far has wanted it. I had a bride call me up yesterday from just seeing it on my vlog. She's like, can I book you for the Super 8? I'm like, are you booking me for the still photography too? She's like, oh, I don't know yet. I'm like, well, you'd have to book me for both. So I'm getting calls like that now. And every bride that I've shown it in my studio comes in just for the still photography. A lot of them don't even know I offer it, but once I show it to them, I can see the emotion in their eyes. And if you remember like the last episode of the Wonder Years, I mean, that's what it provokes. It provokes that kind of emotion, I think. And whether it's nostalgic for a person just thinking of their family or their parents, something they would have done, or their grandparents, it just provides a different look than everything super clean, shot in 1080p on a 5D Mark II where everything is in crystal focus and everything is super sharp. It's different. It's more emotion. There's more weight to it. It's more gritty. It's messy, which is like what life is. Life is imperfect. And I think it mimics that, and that's why people have an emotional attachment to it. Is because they think of stuff like that. And when you think back of memories, your memories aren't always perfectly clear. They're messy. And that's kind of like Super 8 is to me. So everybody I have showed it to so far has booked it for next year.
That's great. So let's talk about film stocks. What are you shooting your motion with? And let's talk about what you're shooting your stills with.
The stills right now, I like everything. I love Kodak film and I love Fuji film. So I'm using different films for different things. For portraits, I'm using 400 and 160 VC. Black and white, I've been using Kodak, the T-Max 400, as well as the TMZ 3200 and the Ilford HP5. I love those films. Those are immaculate. I'm very big on pushing and then altering the exposure. So if I'm shooting T-Max 400, I'm going to rate that at 800 and then have my lab process it at 1600. And I find that's how I get that high contrast look that I like. I find that's how I want my shots to look. I've tried a few different ways experimenting. shooting it at 320, shooting it at 200, and I find the way that film reacts to me, the way my mind sees the shot while I'm framing it in my head, is to shoot it at 800 and process it at 1600, just to push it. And then I also like Fuji Press 800, which is discontinued and I've been stock loading on online. I have like over 100 rolls of it right now. I just like that really gritty, grainy, desaturated look with that fourth color layer. You kind of get like a blue tint to a lot of things. And I just love that film because it just reminds me of all my old newspaper days, because that's what we'd shoot. It was all Fuji Press 1600 and Fuji Press 800. So I shoot that for a lot of the documentary moments if I'm not shooting black and white, because I like the way it comes out like that. As far as the movie stock I'm using right now, it's three films. I'm using the Kodak 500T, the 200T, and the Blackwood and White One Tri-X reversal film. I shoot those all as normal. I do have to take the pair of pliers on the 500 and 200T to break off the little clip in the corner so that I can use the gel when I'm outside shooting. I did see on Kodak's website that they did release some new daylight films, 200D film, and I could be mistaken on that. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, they have the Vision 3 200D as well, so now you can have Vision 3 200D 200T that's brand new as a 200T, and then, of course, the 500T. And the way that that film uses mixed lighting, the stuff's amazing, and I think that's what we've seen here with the adoption of these new stocks by Kodak have been the motion picture film technology that Kodak is always improving and making better. And this is bleeding over to still photography, because if you look at Ektar 100 and, of course, this new Portra 400, is all derivatives of the motion picture Vision 3 technology.
It's incredible film. I mean, I haven't seen it for sale. Right now, I've been buying all my Super 8 film at B&H, and I haven't seen the new Kodak Super 8 films there. Maybe every time I go, they're sold out, but I've been dying to order some. I just haven't seen it. But yeah, motion picture film. I was reading some tests online, and somebody bought Kodak 500T film. I think they got it in like 35 millimeter size, and they basically took the spools of it and they loaded it into 35 millimeter still camera cassettes. And they shot it at different things, shoot it at 1,000, shoot it at 1,600, shoot it at 3,200. And it looked a lot better pushed and pulled than the Kodak and existing Fuji like 800 films. So that movie film technology is just head over heels ahead of a lot of the still photography negatives, because the still photography really wasn't being developed anymore. It's digital. But movies are always being made. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, and they're always looking to get new film stocks to compete with the digital cameras. So that's why I think the movie films, like you said, they're just incredible.
Well, I mean, look at what's going on in Hollywood now. I mean, you have this Red camera out that shoots at 4K native resolution. You have the brand new camera from Arri, the Alexia, and you still have 90% of everything still shot on film. Even look at television shows like House and a lot of stuff that you see on BBC and all these other places. They're all shot on Super 16. They don't even shoot 35. Yeah? They shoot it on film. You can get better capture. It's really cool stuff. And it's what's so interesting is with the Kodak Vision 3 500T film, if you shoot that in a regular 35 millimeter camera, you can shoot that stuff from ISO 100 to 3200 with one piece of film. The problem is it has the rim jet coating on the back that's a carbon anti-slip, anti-static coating for motion picture use. You can't just take it to the lab and say, here, develop it, dude, because it's a different process. It's a different deal, but it's just amazing the technology that is in motion picture film that hasn't even completely trickled down yet to the still offering.
I think that's what they're probably going to end up having to do, because people are going to demand it if the film industry is to stay alive, which I think it is doing well. And I just talked to my publisher today, and they want to do a second book and wants to be a book on film. She's just been doing a lot of research, and I have to do a little bit more research too on numbers-wise, but she thinks the numbers are there to make a book about shooting film photography, and that would be successful. I think the whole lamography movement as well, I mean, that's a big movement for amateur photographers, selling all these plastic and old cameras to people. People still like film. A lot of art students, when they think about photography, they think about film. Yes, 90% of the population, they don't care. They just want a photo to put on Facebook. But that 10% of people who always wanted to be photographers, who were photographers before everybody got a digital camera, I think diehard people still think photography is film. Also, you're the artist. I was listening to the gentleman you interviewed, I think it was last week, about the Cibachrome prints. I mean, those art people are always going to shoot film because to them it's a medium as an art form versus just clicking and capturing something on a digital device.
Well, sure. It's that whole master process that Frank's doing at the Lab Ciba. I mean, if people see Cibachromes and they look at it, it just blows your mind. People don't even realize that the stuff's still available. So I think there's so many options with photography these days, and especially with analog capture, that doesn't like shooting some chrome and having a Cibachrome print made or shooting motion picture stock. I think it's all very cool. Joseph, tell me about your book. You got a brand new book out. It just hit the street. It's fresh.
Yes, it's supposed to be in Barnes & Noble stores on the shelf by the 23rd. It's online now. It's called Fearless Photographer Weddings. And I wrote it with Kathleen D. Small, who was basically the ghostwriter editor in it, because I could fill up content left and right, but dramatically, to get like a C+. So she kind of went in there and made everything flow. And the book is by Course Technology and Cengage Learning. That's my publisher. But it's called The Fearless Photographer, and it's a weddings book. It's a book, basically, that I wanted to write, and I wanted to write a book for a while. And this publisher contacted me. I didn't even contact them. Come to find out, one of my brides booked me because she liked the way I shot things differently. And she worked in this book company, and she brought it up to the acquisition department. And she's like, you need to have them write a book. So they contacted me. We did a bunch of proposals. This is going to be a different book. I said, I don't want to write another how-to photograph a wedding book. There's a million of those. I want to write a book that's for people who are already shooting weddings, already taking photos, know how to use their stuff, and make them a better photographer. So my book is more about motivation and changing the way you think when you're shooting, about approaching a subject, approaching the wedding, approaching the getting ready photos, how to approach doing the portraits, to do those fashion things, to do those cinematic moments. And that's what my book is about. It's not about you hold your camera over here and the shutter's over here and you click 2.8 at 100. It's not about that. It's about making you a better photographer and trying to change the way you think and the way your mind's working when you shoot something. And I write in it that it doesn't matter what you're shooting. I don't care if you're shooting a 1950s camera or shooting the latest H2 or H1 from Hasselblad with an 80 megapixel back. It doesn't make a difference. It's all about the way you approach, the way you look at things to get that shot that's going to be different. And that's what I wanted my book to be about, and that's what it is about. I have a really smart person I know. I don't want to say we're friends because I've only hung out with him a few times at a few different conventions. But a really incredible photographer. His name is Doug Botwell. Him and his wife, they have Botwell Studios. Doug wrote a chapter in here on Photoshop because he does a lot of those cool actions. So he contributed to that. And I also got Neil Van Neerkerk to be my technical editor on the book to make sure I didn't write anything that was technically wrong. He wrote a section, he's creative, as well as Shannon Botwell. She wrote a section in the book about how she stays creative. And that's what the book is basically about, is how you can be different and how people are being creative and how you're thinking about it so that you don't get stuck in a cookie-cutter way of doing your work.
The book looks great, and I think that people are going to get a lot of information from it. And I love the title because really to be an effective photojournalist, to be an effective wedding photographer, you have to be fearless.
Yeah, you can't go there and be scared. You can't be stressed out. I mean, when I go to a wedding, I'm excited. I cannot wait to try out something new, whether it's a new type of film that I have on me that I'm going to try a roll of it, or if it's a new lens, or maybe in my head, it's a new shot. Like, one of the things that inspires me, I don't look at wedding magazines. I get inspired by two things as far as weddings go. One is movies, and the other is fashion. So I'll watch a movie, and like, oh my God, that shot, I need to do that. Or I'll see an ad in Vogue, like Vogue Italia, or I have a book called The Stylist. And it's this book of all these photographic fashion stories from the past 60 years and the stylists and how they were put together. So in my head, I look at these things like, oh, what did this guy do in 1984? Or what did this guy do in 2000? And I try to frame some shots of the wedding that are like that, whether it's everybody dancing on the dance floor, that kind of looks like a club scene, or put it in a bride and groom and just tell them, I want you guys to cross the street from one side to the other. I have to alter it to make it my own thing, so I'll have them do something that's emotional and wedding-related. But I'm going to shoot it instead of straight on. I'm going to shoot it from a bridge over to the two of you. So I'm shooting down onto the street and getting a different view than straight on or laying on the ground and shooting up. So I like to look for stuff like that. And that's, to me, what being fearless is doing crazy things like getting in a boat in the water to take a photo of a bride and groom and almost falling in, which I did this summer. And my assistant said, never do that again. So it's about being crazy. And if you're not crazy, you're going to get bored and you don't enjoy what you're doing.
That's right. No guts, no glory. So what do you look forward to in your photography moving forward? I mean, you're shooting more film. You're doing the motion stuff with the Super 8. You're shooting with the Hasselblad X-Pan. What do you want to do next? What's next for Joseph?
The next thing is probably going to be picking up a few used 1NRSs with a Pelleke mirror so you don't have to see any of the mirror flipping and shooting most of the wedding 90% all on film. That's my next goal, is to bring a wedding pretty much to 100% film. Except for the dancing stuff, which I'm going to just shoot digital, because that I really don't care about, just people jumping up and down really drunk with beers in their hand. That can be done digitally. But I want to shoot the actual wedding completely on film, which I'm getting pretty close to right now. I will keep my assistant shooting digital, because she's, I think, more comfortable, and just God forbid anything were to happen, she'll have a backup. But I want to bring myself to 100% shooting film, and that's my goal for next year, to have wedding signed completely on film.
No, I think it's a great way. And you stand out from the competition. So be able to create a great product, but even more so to be able to have a unique product.
Exactly. When you see a film image, whether it's a 35 millimeter image or it's a 6x5 or a 6x6 or a 6x7, which is really cool. I've been using one of those too. It's just the negative looks different. And I mean, the print is always going to look better than a scan, I think optically. But I mean, I have to have my stuff scanned so that I can edit it in my workflow on Aperture. So I just love the way it looks. Today on my blog, I just posted a new family shoot I did. I shot these two family portrait sessions, and I shot those completely on film 100%. And I was just blown away by the little moments and just the way the grain and everything makes the photo look. It just makes it feel real. Like, if I look at the photos of me growing up, they're all on probably Kodak or Fuji. What film was that back in the day? It wasn't 120. It wasn't medium format film. It was like the 110 film or something.
Oh, 126.
Yeah, so these little plastic cassette that would go in these little skinny cameras, and if you get these square photos back, they were really grainy. And those are all basically what my parents shot me on. So I have an emotional connection to shooting film, because when I look at my photos growing up, the photos of me on a wall at my parents' house, it's all film. And I think the photo means more when it has something in it that's not completely perfect. And that's what I love about shooting the film. The film has weight to it. It has characteristics. I'm not having to go in Photoshop and give it characteristics or make it look a certain way by adding a tone here or sharpness there. I'm shooting the film I want to get a look I want, and it's done deal. That's it.
Exactly. And, I mean, I'm talking to a photographer the other day, and he does this unbelievable, fabulous HDR digital photography in Las Vegas of like Nevada landscapes and in Vegas and ghost towns. And what's really interesting, in his workflow process, when he comes to the end and he's got everything where he likes it, it's too sterile. What does he do? He uses a Nik software plugin, ColorFX Pro, and he adds grain to it, and then the images, boom, they pop and they look real. When they don't have the grain in them, they look sterile. They don't look right. They're just not right.
Yeah. I mean, I've been using, since they came out, the Bowell actions, the Totally Right actions. Those things are amazing. And I've had, for any key photo, I mean, before I was shooting film, I had to use actions, and I used Doug's actions because I wanted them to look real. But over the past year, saying to myself, I'm making all my shots look like film. If I'm shooting digital and then going into post-production to make them look like film, why not just shoot film in the first place? I mean, people will give you the argument that it's more expensive, but for the money that if you're a professional photographer that you're charging a bride already, it's not a huge increase in your cost. It just isn't. I mean, I think I pay $17 a roll to have it developed and scanned, which is not bad.
Well, the thing is what do you value your time at? Do you want to have a unique product? Do you want to be able to pick things up from the lab, drop the DVD into Aperture, spend about a half hour, and be done with it?
Exactly. I mean, today I edited those two family sessions on film in under an hour, and that's probably 200 to 400 photos in each session there.
Right. Now, what would that have taken if you shot it all in digital? More than an hour?
Yeah, more than an hour. That would be in Photoshop manipulating each one. Probably would have taken 2 to 3 hours.
It would have taken an hour just to back it up correctly, so you don't lose the
Exactly. Stack. See, I have the negatives that go in a nice little sleeve with the CD from the lab that they copied everything onto, and then they get put away. And then I have on my hard drive. I don't have to worry about backing it up in 10 different locations.
No. Joseph, so let's do this. Tell people where they can look at your website. Let's talk about your blog, and where can they go find out this new book?
My website is josephprezioso.com. That's J-O-S-E-P-H-P-R-E-Z-I-O-S-O, and it's pronounced Joseph Prezioso, because I'm Italian, but no one understands it when I say it that way. And you can go there and click on weddings, see my wedding work, and my blog is where I post everything basically I'm doing, whether it's fashion, whether it's my latest wedding, or whether it's just me hanging out with my godsons and photographing them. I post everything I do on my blog. I think my blog is pretty much a historical document of my life, of what I've been doing. And sometimes I just write crazy things there, too. So it's always interesting. My book is available at Barnes & Noble. It's also on Amazon.com. If you just go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and you type in Fearless Photographer, you see my name come up. It'll say Joseph Salvatore Prezioso. That's the book, and it's in stores on the 23rd. And I hope you guys go out there and get it and read it. And I would love to see some reviews. I'm dying to see what you guys say. If you hate it, I want to know why you hate it. If you love it, I want to know why you love it. I want to get a real reaction from people. I know some people aren't going to be happy with what I wrote, and some people are going to say, oh, that's awesome, and then I'm going to have those people say, oh, well, you're not the first to say that. And that's cool, but I just want to get reactions to it.
No, I think people are going to dig it, and it's great to see you posting your film images over in the Digital Wedding Forum, and it's so interesting to see the replies and what people that are hardcore digital You show them some of these X-Pan images and some nice grainy black and white with some P3200, and they're just like, whoa.
Right. They're not used to this. No photographers in my area that have never shot film at a wedding. My intern this past summer, as far as I know, she had never shot a film camera before. After she saw the Super 8 movie that we did, she's like, Joey, I'm so sorry. I wanted to shoot the Super 8 now. Next wedding, I want to shoot the Super 8. It's just the whole experience of kids growing up today not having that, and I think it needs to be exposed to them. I think college students studying film or studying journalism needs to be exposed to film as a capture method and not just as a hobby.
That's right, and I think if people embrace the hybrid workflow with analog capture, it's scanned and then it goes in the digital environment, because here's the thing. Nobody prints analog anymore unless it's one-off black and white, or you have Frank Green at the SIBA lab, or something really custom and cool done. Anybody that's doing proofs and printing for weddings and books and albums and everything else, they go into a digital environment, so you can get this analog, you can capture it beautifully, you can get the look of film, and you get the beautiful output. And if you don't embrace hybrid workflow, if people don't embrace this, it's going to die.
Yeah, basically. I'm quoting this. Somebody posted a link on the DWF film thread to, I think it's called the hybrid blog, or it was hybrid workflow, and the guy said that the Achilles heel, that's what he said, of still photography right now for film is scanners. And I completely agree with that guy. Basically, if you want a good scan, you either have to have a really expensive drum scanner, or you have to have a Nuritsu machine that's $100,000 to scan it.
That's the thing. That was Stephen Schaub, and that was the Digital Revolution. And Stephen's point was that somebody needs to come out with a $500 film scanner that's easy to use and it rocks.
Yeah, I mean, there is that cool scan stuff, but it only scans frame at a time. It won't do a whole roll, and it won't do my X-Pan, so I couldn't get that.
For a flatbed scanner, the Epson V750M Pro is great. You can do wet scans with it, but it's a flatbed scanner. It's a little slower than doing a roll film scanner, but for the money, for like $700, I mean, the thing's unbelievable.
I haven't tried out any of the, I mean, right now I'm bringing everything to a lab in Boston called Color Tech and another lab called the Finer Image, and they've been doing all my work.
I mean, if you're hardcore enough, you can buy a Fuji SP2500 roll film scanner like they use in a lab. And you can pick them up for $2,000 or $3,000, but it's a little bit of involvement. There's some investment, and you have to train yourself on a new gig. So if you're doing so much work, well, it might be worth it. But usually, like you said, you drop the stuff in a bag, you take it to the lab, you FedEx it off to somebody, Richard Photo Lab, right? And the stuff comes back, or it's on FTP, and it's done. Cool.
Exactly. That's it. That's what I'm loving right now, because a lot of my buddies are in Boston. So what I use for all my film development is in Boston. I just drop it off in their overnight box, sometimes right after the wedding. And then in a day or two, it's all ready.
Right. And a lot of people, I think they would look at it as, do you supply proofs with your weddings?
It's an optional choice right now. It was not optional. I included it at every wedding up until this year, where this summer I wanted to push some bigger albums. But I am going to be reintroducing prints as mandatory with my collections.
So it's interesting. I mean, if people start looking at when you shoot film, and then the lab develops them, they scan them, and you get proofs back, people are going to think, oh, I need to modify this, or I have to edit it. And if they even look at a digital scanned file of a piece of film, and they look at it going, nah, I don't think that's going to look good, I need to change it. And if you actually look at a print that's made, you're like, whoa, that's better than I thought. So it's interesting how you can shoot film, get stuff back from the lab and get a proof, and you can hand it to the customer. You don't have to do nothing.
Film, I think it has a higher dynamic range than a lot of digital sensors and most cameras.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, if you get a kind of good current new film stock and you expose it correctly, you can get 12 to 14 stops or even more out of black and white. And you can do that with digital. You're not going to do that with an economically priced digital. You will with a medium format back. Like if you have a P65 plus phase one back, you're going to get the same as film. But guess what? It's going to cost you $60,000.
And you still have to go into a raw program to manipulate it. I mean, there's some things that I'm going to always still shoot digitally. But I think everything has a use, whether it's digital or it's film. It's all a means to an end to get the shot the way I want it.
Here's the thing. If you're shooting news, who cares? It's disposable. You look at it, and it's gone the next day, and you don't remember it, right? Shoot it on digital. But if you're shooting a wedding, family portraits, archival, if you want something that you want to keep, then you're not going to go wrong with shooting film. So all our friends on the digital wedding forum can embrace film and use this as part of their package and really create a great product and do a good deed to their customer. Because here's the thing. I don't know how long you've been playing with computer stuff, but these files, all hard drives are going to die.
Oh, I have to replace them all the time. I have a program on my computer running constantly. It tells me to replace hard drive A or drive B or whatever on my Mac Pro. I'm replacing them all the time because my computer's always on. I'm always running. And it's like, oh, I got to back it up here. I got to transfer files here. But if I have the negatives, I just have them rescanned. I don't have to worry about it. If it's a wedding from 5 years ago, just rescan the negatives.
Right. And the thing is, too, is you shoot film, right? And I come back 10 years later, and there's this new whiz-bang nuclear carbon cobalt technology that I can scan stuff unbelievable. I can rescan my own negs, and guess what? I got the state-of-the-art file.
Well, that's what I've been pushing the Super 8 as. I tell them, you can go ahead, you can have your wedding shot on the latest high-definition camera, and they'll give you an awesome DVD. What are you going to do in 10 years when that DVD is scratched? Or no one uses DVD players anymore. What are you going to do when we're watching movies on cubes?
Well, no, we will. There's going to be holographic storage, and it's already to the point now. I mean, look at the new Apple TV. I sign up for Netflix. I can just watch movies on the fly. I can watch YouTube. I can rent movies from iTunes. So here's the thing is this is already starting to eliminate the need for a solid DVD media product. Right. It's all electronic, so pretty soon, dude, people aren't going to have DVDs. I mean, I know people now that don't even have regular DVD players. It's only Blu-ray. Now, of course, it's backwards compatible. How many people do you know that still has a VHS player in their TV or in their living room?
My father.
Yeah, they're okay. So the thing is, that stuff, that's gone. I think some places you go to look for a VHS player, you can't even buy one in the store.
No, I haven't seen them for sale in years. But the way I look at it is, if you had your wedding shot on Super 8 in the 80s versus somebody who had their wedding shot on a VHS tape, that VHS tape today probably doesn't play unless they kept retransferring it. But if you have that Super 8 reel and you kept care of it, you can just retransfer that to whatever format you want.
Well, look at videotape. It's iron oxide on plastic. It's rust on plastic. You know, eventually it dissolves. No matter how good you store it, later, brother, it's gone. So I think it just reiterates what we've been talking about is how cool this film stuff is and this beautiful photography that you're doing. So, Joseph, one more time, your website, the blog, where can people find out what you're up to?
It's josephprezioso.com. That's P-R-E-Z-I-O-S-O. And my blog is right there on the main page. Just click that, and I'm posting almost every other day with different stories and different things I'm shooting. And I want people to come and enjoy it. And if you're going to DWF in San Antonio, which I'm planning on be there, I'm going to set up an outdoor shoot, get a model, and I want to have a film-only shoot where everybody shows up with film cameras. And we're going to talk about shooting brides on film. Like song in the beginning of this radio podcast, Girls on Film.
There you go, buddy. Joseph, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. Beautiful photography, great work, cool inspiration, and we look forward to the new book and all this other great stuff and chatting here soon. Thank you.
Glad to be here, Scott. Thank you.
Well, there you go. Joseph Prezio. Great guy, beautiful photography, 35 medium format, X-Pan wide format, portraiture, wedding event coverage, documentary editorial. Cool stuff going on with Joseph. Definitely check out his website. The Inside Analog Photo Radio Program has been brought to you by Fujifilm for their full line of instant cameras and film and, of course, fine quality Fuji Crystal Archive paper over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. Our friends at Photo Publicist, Worldwide Publicity, Strategic Promotion, Social Media Marketing, and Business Development over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the finest quality lab in the country, richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 for black and white chrome at dr5.com. Upstrap for the finest quality camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder at upstrap-pro.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios at igerstudios.com. And of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group at apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House over at eastmanhouse.org. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photo. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.